This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the first in a series of podcasts focused on growth companies. The first podcast focuses on tech. Hamish Perry, Tanya Wilkie, and me, Megan Paul, interview co-founder Gareth Fryer from Fika Community. Gareth, thank you very much for joining us on our podcast.
Hi, guys. Hello.
What we thought we'd like to start with is just a bit of background on you. We obviously know you and your co-founder, Nick Bennett, very well. But we'd like our listeners to have the opportunity to hear a bit more about you and how you got to being a co-founder of Fika.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. Well, thanks for having me for a start. So I'll tell a bit of a story about my background and how Nick and I met and where Fika came from. So I've always worked between people and technology. So I studied psychology. I've always had a fascination between how people behave. And I ended up working in products, service design, and looking at how you can use technology to help solve problems for people at scale. So I've worked with a whole host of different agencies. I've worked with global brands. And more recently, I was part of building up and selling a service design consultancy. So as part of that, we were building products and services for the likes of Transport for London and the Met Police and a lot of the global banks. And then myself and my co-founder Nick, we met 13 years ago when we were working together in agency land. And we were working on lots of digital campaigns and services for back in the days when viral campaigns were a thing and social media was just getting started and that sort of thing. So Nick and I have known each other for a long time before going off into our separate paths. I went more into product and service design consulting, and Nick went into startup world as a chief product officer and spent a good number of years in products. Throughout both of that, all of that time, both of us have always talked about starting a business together. We were a team when we worked together in the agency. We loved working with each other. And when we left, we have always flirted with the idea of doing something together. And the time was never right. I was either building up the business I was in, or Nick was about to, you know, get a next funding round with another startup. So the stars had never aligned. And aligned to both of those things, I think, is both of our personal stories with the kind of mental health spectrum. And that's ultimately why we decided to leave both of our careers behind and start Fika. We both have our own personal stories in the space. Mine has, I'm very open about it. I've always struggled with my mental well-being, in a sense where I was on the outside, I've always been fine. So I'm the classic, I'm fine, flying around the world, presenting, running teams, you know, leading a company. But on the inside, not sleeping at night, waking up with the cold sweats at 2 o'clock in the morning, always thinking about what could happen, what might go wrong. All part of being a strategist, I suppose. Always thinking about the future. And as well as that, I've been diagnosed with cancer twice. Once when I was at university, and I didn't have the emotional toolkit to deal with it at all. And the second time, actually more recently, just in November last year. So I'm kind of going through treatment for that at the moment. So my reasons for starting Fika were very personal, as are Nick's. He has his own kind of story in this. But to surmise, I'd say I came out of my career realizing that I'd spent all of my life trying to work on being better at physical fitness. So training for races and Tough Mudders and running half marathons and always trying to eat better and all those things. And I'd never done the same with my mental well-being at all. I'd always just kind of assumed, well, I'm not ill. So that, and I just kind of not ever addressed that positively. And I think that was the gap that we set about trying to solve, was to look at some more of how can we bring some of that proactive and genuine intervention to the mental health spectrum. And Fika is the result of that.
And in terms of Fika, I mean, thank you for being so open with us about your history and your background and what drove you and Nick to sort of start the community. But in terms of the personal drivers and then the professional exterior that you have when dealing with partners and sort of seeking to grow a business and getting investment, how have you sort of found that, sort of trying to marry up those two very different things?
You know, what's been actually fantastic is it's the first time in my entire career where I've actually just been, where we're just open. You know, the thing about the mental health spectrum, and I think I'm going to keep saying that because it's really important that we all understand that this, it is a spectrum. It's both positive and negative. And the thing with that is everyone understands the story that we're telling is kind of common sense that we're talking about. We've had decades of trying to proactively develop skills in physical fitness. Why haven't we done the same with mental fitness? And as soon as you're open with your stories, and I'm as open now with everybody about this stuff, purely because I think, not because I'm trying to sell off what's happened, I'm just telling a relatable story about why this matters to me. And in an essence, yeah, we've not had to differentiate the two, which has been wonderful in a sense that this is both a passion project and a business. And we've always been clear that whilst we have a global ambition to change the way we think about the mental health spectrum, we know we had to do that through building a business, and both of our backgrounds are been doing that. So it's been nice, to be honest, to not have to differentiate the two.
Yeah, I bet. Nice and refreshing. I think a lot of us spend a lot of time being one professional person, and then the personal person behind it sort of gets forgotten on occasion. But just focusing on that for the moment and thinking about the FICA community and, you know, the drive behind it, can you talk a bit about the app, the platform, the business as a whole, and what your sort of emotional fitness is obviously the vision, but then how you put it into, you know, a technical application and a business?
Sure. I guess it's important to state that whenever you start a company, you know, it's all well and good having ideas, but ideas don't really mean anything. It's about you have to find the problem behind the problem. It's like ideas are all well and good, but if they're not solving the right problem, then it's not the right idea. So we've spent a good number of years, and we're still, it's a constant journey. It's trying to work out, really define what the problem we're solving is. When we started out, we knew what we wanted to achieve, but we didn't know exactly what the problem was that we were going to end up solving. And so we've taken an evidence-based approach to that. The first thing we did was hire our academic team, so psychology experts and research experts that Nick and I know well. We've invested in taking a design thinking, design-led approach, which is where you work with people, you understand needs, you design solutions, you test them, and you keep kind of going. We learned very early on that there's actually decades of evidence from new sciences and old ones like mindfulness and positive psychology and sports psychology, solution focused therapy. There's all these great things that you can exercise your emotions to achieve outcomes and to offset mental health decline. So you can exercise your confidence, your motivation, etc. So where we started was, right, let's build a format to make that globally scalable so that you can exercise your motivation, you can exercise your confidence, your sense of purpose. And we did that. And we evidenced it with a randomized control trial, which is, you know, the gold standard of evidence. And we've proven that it works and it has a psychological impact. But something was still missing. And we really then looked at a bit more about what was missing. And we've, I think, now really understood. And that's actually, we don't know we need to do those things globally as a culture. We don't actually understand the mental health spectrum well enough to know that we need to exercise it. Whereas we've all had decades and decades of evidence, of being taught that we should exercise physically. We're taught it in school, and we know the importance of it, but we've never done it with mental health at all. And now actually, if depression is the leading cause of disability on the planet, and in the UK, it's the leading cause of mental ill health is the leading cause of disability in the UK by 22% of all disability. I think it's 16.5% for cancer and 19.5% for heart disease or something like that. Maybe the other way around. Either way, disability is the biggest one. And if the WHO say that the number one predictor of our actual health status is our health literacy, i.e. if we understand something well enough, we are more likely to have healthy habits. That's kind of a damning indictment of our mental health literacy, isn't it? If globally, that's the number leading cause of disability. And the biggest indicator of that is our literacy in that area. So that's what we've now set about doing, is building actually the education underpinnings as to the fact that you can exercise your emotions, but why you need to and why it's really important and how the science actually works and how there are two types of stress. One of them is really good for us, but we just label all stress as bad. There are two types of anxiety. It's part of our limbic nervous system. We involved it for a reason. It's how we think about consequences and plan for the future. but we just label all of it. So that's what kind of, I've told that story, it's not about tech, but it's to kind of understand the context for the tech, is then how do we create a globally scalable platform to embed mental education and mental fitness into culture, into schools, into colleges, into universities, and into the workplace to actually help us all be more mentally fit.
And so could you tell us a bit about what the app does to encourage emotional fitness and how an individual would go about using it to sort of increase their awareness of their mental fitness and emotional fitness?
Sure, yeah. So we've built the platform now so that it's built for institutions. So we distribute Fika through institutions, through universities, through schools, through colleges, through organizations, etc. So, and we take a very customized approach to it. So we actually bring in stories from real people, from athletes, from employees, from students, from anyone, and actually wrap our exercises around a very relatable context so that it feels real. Again, if you understand how we learn, hearing stories is one of the best ways we retain information, so that it's a storytelling education format, but told through relatable stories of people. And those, the exercises that we've built are based around seven skills. So there's kind of a relatable story and then an exercise around the seven skills of mental fitness. And they are confidence, focus, motivation, purpose, meaning, etc. So that's kind of what the platform does, is it's storytelling and education and exercise through a unique format that's digestible. So it only takes five minutes. And that's the point, really, is that you don't need to spend hours and hours doing this. It's much more important to just take a regular habit and spend a little bit of time on thinking about your mental health.
I know from our sort of work together so far that the main one of the key areas of focus is sort of the education sector in universities, but it sounds like could really work in large corporates or any period of life, really, where someone's going through change.
Definitely, yeah. We've always thought that Fika is about lifelong learning. It, you know, mental fitness is a skill. The skills of mental education are for everybody. They're not just for universities or students. We started in education purely because when you start a business, the worst thing you can do is dilute yourself into trying to address too many different audiences. We started with the universities for two reasons. Firstly, they're very, very good areas to pilot, because you have discrete populations that are addressable and they can be split up around, you know, different factors, different locations, etc. There's a well-diagnosed issue to be addressed with student mental health, and to be looking at a positive approach to that. Sorry, and the third reason is we wanted an academic evidence base. So before we go out into the wider world, we felt it was very, very important to have the stamp of academic rigor that universities take to anything that they do, because that helps us in when we kind of move out into the wider marketplace.
Approaching the universities and that sort of demographic, did that impact the sort of the use of tech or the type of tech and how you introduce that to that demographic, sort of a very young, very dynamic set of people sort of interested in technology, interested in sort of intuitive learning, using AI and using the application in the way that you have? Was that guided by the initial sort of foray into the market, or was that always the design?
The ambition was always to do scale, I think, and you know, technology gives us scale, and the ambition was always to get things into people's hands that they can do easily. And if you look at that, these aren't going anywhere. I'm holding up my phone. You know, they're part of all of our everyday lives, and they're not going to be going anywhere. So that was always the ambition. Again, you know, the student audience definitely have an even lower barrier to entry to using that technology, because it's ever present. But I think we always had the ambition to build scalable tech, because that's how you make a global, how you build a global business. It just, again, obviously, did it help starting with an audience that's their absolute expectation? Yeah, of course. It's kind of, the two are kind of combined.
Picking up on the point, Gareth, you made before about the fact that you have to educate the population as to the need to exercise your mental health, how do you see the next stage working then in terms of educating the wider populace that there's a need for this kind of exercise in addition to physical exercise? Because I guess it's relatively easy with universities in terms of you can access the population, the university, through the kind of the governing body of the various universities. But how does one do that on a scaling up?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, actually. And one of the things we've always balanced is mainstream versus targeted and going through kind of owners of populations. The thing with mainstream is that we want it to be evidence-based, but that's really a measure of how much money you can raise to spend on advertising. So, you know, if your typical tech startup approach is, you know, build a product, raise money, and then spend it all on paid adverts to get people to become aware of it. And we wanted to spend our money on academic rigor and evidence base and proof to that this has a meaningful impact. So we've started out going through owners of populations who have a duty of care for that population, and then they're promoting it to them. Because if you think about it, any given population, you can look at employees, you can look at schools, you can look at universities. There are people who are responsible for that population who have a duty of care for them. So that's how we're looking at distributing Fika to grow. We want to get to a point where we're promoting this nationally, and we are working with and we run government level think tanks, and we're working with, you know, trying to set a government agenda around mental education. It's also, though, to be fair, it's a growing sector. This is the growth area. You know, we're definitely not saying that we're the only solution, nor should we be. The whole point about this is we should all have as much choice as we do in physical health, and we should appreciate the fact that why we need it. I think we're taking our approach to it. There's lots of other ways you can do it. But at the moment, we're going through owners of populations, because it means that we don't have to spend loads of cash on advertising, frankly.
And was that pretty stressful to start with, Gareth, in terms of like talking to your investors and saying, hang on, we're not going to go down like the usual tech startup route. We're going to take an alternative route. Was that something that was they challenged you with, or was that something that you'd always decided to do, so went right ahead?
No, we tried things, and we learned what worked and what didn't, and we went where the appetite was to start with. Again, like with any business, is you follow the traction, and we followed the traction of where we were getting it, and then defined our strategy around where we were seeing the success to help us get to the next level. But, you know, we're very lucky. Our investors are, well, they're all friends and family. They're connections of people that we know, and every round our investors have brought new investors in. So we have a very close relationship with all of them, which obviously helps. A lot of them we've worked with before. So our investors are brilliant. We have great conversations with them. We talk out the strategy, they challenge us, but ultimately they've backed us across the board to make decisions in the best interest of the business.
Okay, so moving on then to sort of that kind of an investment side of things, have you found it relatively easy to get the funding you need to get going, or is it, as with all startups, has it been sort of a long, hard kind of work?
Yeah, I'd never call it easy, that's for sure. I think that, you know, we get asked often, what's the one thing that you worry about? And we're like, raising money. You know, anyone who runs a new business or a business is about cash flow and making sure that you have the money to meet your ambitions. So it's definitely not been easy. We've had some fantastic support, and I don't think any of our investors would mind us saying that nobody wants to give you money. You know, you have to justify and work hard to justify being given or earning money from investors. Nobody just gives it to you. So, definitely not been easy.
Yeah, but I suppose you've been able to demonstrate their faith in you by the fact that they've sort of come back and sort of invested more than once, and a number of your investors. So it must be, give you some heart that you're doing the right thing, and they're happy to follow the money into a subsequent round.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, we never take that for granted. You can never, despite a lot of them being our friends and family, that we treat everybody as you would with any investors. We're incredibly grateful to get their money. We appreciate what it means, and we want to deliver the duty of care to them as much as we do to the people that we're trying to serve. So, yeah, we've been very gratefully receiving of some great follow on from our group. Not going to take that for granted at all. You know, we've done what we wanted to have done by this stage, but we're only just getting started still. There's so much more to do. So,
yeah. And so moving so slightly away from just the pure investment side, I think, how did you go about, between you and Nick, kind of getting together all the support you needed from a professional perspective in getting the company up and running?
I think, again, and this is where you kind of say that it sounds like there's a master grand plan, but in startup world, I mean, it's doing whatever you need to do to get it off the ground, right? So Nick and I work brilliantly because we complement each other really well as co-founders. We've both got wide ranging experiences in kind of growing businesses and startups and products and stuff. So between the two of us, we've got quite a lot of experience. I'd call it experience of lots of areas a bit to be able to cover enough to get going. I wouldn't call us by any means experts in loads of the areas. And working with people, talking to friends, our investors have been really helpful. Yourselves, are being open and not being afraid to say when you don't know and asking someone for help.
So Gareth, going back, I mean, you started up Fika, I think it was January 2018. So to date, have you found that, picking up on some of the themes we've been talking about so far in terms of investment challenges and getting the right help and being prepared to say, I don't know, what have been the sort of the real challenges to setting up the business and running so far?
I think, again, that's a pretty straightforward one, actually. It's like any startup business is getting your product market fit, right? So say you understanding the problem you're trying to solve and then finding a solution for it that people are either willing to pay for or use, depending on your business model that you're trying to go for, both, etc. So the challenge has always been getting that product market fit right, feeling confident in the proposition, sales proposition. We're really lucky that I think a lot of businesses struggle with getting your kind of founding team off the ground. Pretty much everyone in our team we've worked with before, or we've worked with someone who knows them before. So we got a good team around us very quickly.
Interesting. So I was going to ask you about that particular around, because you've obviously got two doctors or two psychologists on your team, one of which I think is Dr. Fran, that's got sort of sports background as well. And sort of thinking about how important it is to have the right people as well as the right vision and being able to rely on tech. One of the things that we find really interesting is the dynamic, I suppose, between relying on the tech and relying on the people, and which you think is more important?
Yeah, well, I think I've always said that, people build technology, people build companies, people, it's the people is what matters, because you can have the best tech in the world, but if your team aren't there to support it, then the tech is going to fall over anyway. So I think people always come before. Nick and I also, it's important to say that we've tried to build the company out of a very transparent culture around living the mission that we set out and the true origin of Fika, which is about the Scandinavian tradition over talking and openly over coffee and sweet buns. That's what Fika is all about. So we do that with the team, but at the same time recognizing that no company, like no one person in a company is more important than the company and the mission, because if they are then it's not a good business. And that applies to me and Nick as well. Like a company that relies on a person or a team of people is not a good business. You need to try and make sure that it's scalable across everybody, because that's how you build sustainability into a company. So whilst we're very, very open and we try and look after our people, it is about Fika and the team of people as opposed to individuals. And I think that's important to make that distinction.
And as well as obviously we've talked about your investors and how important they've been in getting everything off the ground, and then the team and the people, but the other thing or the other relationship that seems to have been key in the growth is your relationships with your various partner organizations and university organizations. So how did that all come about, and how have you found those relationships changing over time?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I mean, like we said, we went out with a mission and talked to lots of people in lots of different areas, and we followed the traction to see, to the people who lent in the most and wanted to be part of it when we were obviously at very, very formative stages, nowhere near as far along as we are now. And the first universities that joined us on that journey were, and still continue to be, so passionate and supportive about understanding why this approach to mental health is so needed and wanting to be part of it. And we've had brilliant relationships with them, and we don't use the word partner lightly. It's true that we collaborate, we define things together, we work on things and shared initiatives. Yeah, they've been fantastic. We couldn't have done it without them, really.
You mentioned earlier on, Gareth, that you were sort of looking to sort of work out what the problem was that you needed to solve, but it was always with an aim to kind of reaching a final goal. What is your final goal, if you're able to say?
Yeah, just mainstream mental fitness. Mental fitness needs to be as popular in our culture and as positively thought about as physical fitness is in our culture, because that's the way you offset long-term decline, is by investing in health promotion and positivity and exercise, as opposed to trying to cure because if you're trying to cure, it's always, you're looking at problems of scale always. And so that's, you know, we've done that for 45 years, 50 years in physical health, like, why not in mental health?
And how important, Gareth, have those relationships? I mean, we've talked a bit about your investors and how they're known to you or have been introduced. We've talked a bit about the partnerships that Tanya mentioned and the universities. But in terms of having that support and having those connections, how important has it been for those, or for that community, I guess, to really understand what FICA is about?
For the investment community, you mean, or for
investment, the universities, your professional advisors, across the board, really?
Yeah, I think it's another one where, you know, like anything, it's not always universally understood. Some people get it straight away, some people don't. Some people, like anything in the world, especially when it's something new, and you have to talk people through it. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that every single person we talk to goes, oh my God, that's amazing, I love it, it's the best thing I've ever heard, because that's not how ideas work ever. People have always got their own opinions and thoughts. We're just very thankful of the great support that we have had. And lots of people are looking at solving problems in different ways. Just look for people that align with the way that we're trying to do it.
It's certainly been very interesting from our perspective, hearing sort of how it all works and what the aim is. I mean, Megan and I have spoken about it on occasion and how exciting it is to be a part of it and to hear you talking about it with such passion. So I think, as you say, the more you can get people to understand the why behind it, then the more people going to get involved.
Yeah. Well, we have, I won't lie, we've had a few Emperor's New Clothes moments where we kind of sit there and we think, can it really be that simple? Is it really just, you know, do we need to just actually talk about education and talk about language? But there's a professor, Sir Simon Wesley, he talks about it brilliantly. He's the chair of the Mental Health Act Review in the UK. And he talks about, we have a crisis of mislabeling. It's like language is so important, and the language that we use. And that's what I touched on before about, we mislabel stress and anxiety as illnesses quite a lot. And actually it's very interesting if you just thought about, just change your perspective on those things. And if you just thought about it as being a bit unfit, how would that change the way you framed that yourself? Because if you think about, you're unfit physically, you kind of take the action on yourself, right? You go, I'm going to do my 10,000 steps, I'm going to eat my 5 a day, and I'm going to do whatever. But when it comes to our mental health, we still externalize it a lot. We kind of think, oh, I'm stressed because X has given me too much work, or I'm stressed because this is happening. But in reality, as both physical and mental are our reactions to external stimuli, and you can train yourself to react differently to them. And that's what an education gives you, is the tools to process that information and respond to it. So
I think that's why you choose to use emotional fitness rather than mental health, because there's a certain sort of historic kind of negative connotations potentially with mental health, whereas emotional fitness, as you say, is it could be a better way of describing how one should be treating oneself and working to a better state of mental health.
Yeah, and to raise awareness of it as well. Let's not miss that, you know, mindfulness is a massive movement. Mindfulness has been fantastic, and it is the kind of poster child of positive mental health. But what we miss is that mindfulness is a type of mental exercise. Think of mindfulness like running. Running's really good for increasing your cardiovascular capability, but it's not strength training. It's like, it's exactly the same with your mental health. It's like, mindfulness is a good exercise for certain outcomes. You've got solution focused therapy is another one, and you know, sports psychology and positive psychology and all these different ones. It's like, we've just missed that association between, actually, if you want to work on an outcome with your mental health, there is an exercise for it and you can find it. And I think as well, just to say, and my final piece on this is, I think we like to label mental health as a negative, but then like positive psychology is seen as overly positive quite a lot. It's kind of, we see it as it's all happiness and rainbows, and it isn't about that at all. It's about understanding that life is really hard, and there are tools that you can do to give yourselves the coping mechanisms for both of those things. So we treat them as very opposite ends of the spectrum, but they're not really.
I think that's fascinating, Gareth, as well. I mean, as you know, Tanya and I share an office. Well, usually when we're in the office, we share one. And, you know, we often get chattering about how helpful I think we would have found the app if we, when we were at university, and just really understanding that, you know, while some people might be good at change, other people resist it. And then any kind of transition or any kind of new environment you find yourself in, actually, you've got the tools probably to manage with those situations, but you just need to remind yourself about how to use them. And it's the sort of the practical memory that we often sometimes forget when we are put under, you know, stress, or when we're not sort of, you know, at home chilling out sort of, or, you know, feeling relaxed.
Yeah, I can only take my own story for that, but I've always tried to be physically healthier and tried to do things about it. And at the same time, because I felt unfit. And at the same time, all the way through that career, I felt mentally unfit. But because I knew I wasn't, or I didn't feel mentally, like I wasn't putting myself as mentally ill. So I was like, oh, well, I'm not. Yeah, I'm fine. It's all in my head. Mm. And it's like, it's another one of those things where it's like, all in your head. You wouldn't.
What does that mean?
Yeah, it's like, you wouldn't say, if you've broken your leg, you wouldn't say it's all in my leg, would you? It's like, it is. It's broken. It hurts. And so we've.
So again, true.
It's language is like really important, and that kind of, and all I can say is, as I mentioned before, what's going on with me at the moment personally, and I've been through that journey once before and I didn't have the emotional toolkit to deal with it, but now I feel it's been a really, really stressful time, and I've not in any way saying it's been easy or fun. Of course it hasn't, and I'm terrified all the time, but you can use exercises to kind of frame that fear as positivity by using, if you understand the origins of fear, like fear is a manifestation of what we have to lose. So you can trace your mind to focus on the thing that you have to lose and be grateful for it and spend the time thinking about that rather than the fear part of it. So, sorry, ranting now.
With the situation, picking up on Megan's point about how she normally shares a room with Tanya, and clearly we all find ourselves at home on this podcast, recording this at home. I'm interested to know what sort of challenges and opportunities perhaps the wrong word, the current situation sort of presents to Fika.
I think, well, opportunity is actually the right word. I think, you know, if you look back at businesses that have been born out of global recessions, it's like Uber and Airbnb came out of the last one, and adversity leads to great creativity. It always has, not just for us, for everybody. So thinking about how you solve problems when there's global crises often leads to great businesses, and I expect to see loads come out of this crisis. Speaking about us specifically, I think the challenge is the obvious one, financial, you know, investors, portfolios taking a hit. We know that there's going to be the latest estimates are what, 20 to 25% international student intake decline across universities, leaving an X billion pound black hole, same with corporations, and, you know, it's, the financial challenge is going to be the same for every business that's out there. Then if you look about the opportunity, though, it's highlighted the thing that we've been banging out on about for 2 years, which is the need for psychological support positively as prevention rather than cure. And it's become top of the agenda over the last few months because of people being in isolation and being in lockdown and the worries about mental health decline, that it's raised the narrative for actually needing to positively intervene, and also the need for remotely scalable solutions to allow people to do that. So I think the positive is that actually, ironically, the position of where we're talking about changing the market and the culture, that narrative has shifted a lot in the last few months as a result of COVID-19. But the impact financially remains to be seen. We've taken, as you know, we've taken plans, we've got our contingency plan in place to help us make sure that we have a road through this crisis, and then we'll see. We're working hard on a number of different activities, which I won't talk about on this call, but we're quite confident actually of where we are.
And with how quickly new ideas come up, and with how quickly the tech sort of moves ahead, do you find the business can run as quickly as the tech does to keep up?
No, well, as you guys know, and I'm talking to you about the privacy policy in terms of use and all the things that I'm the one that thinks about having to change all the time, whereas that's, you know, where the rest of the team are like, come on, let's just build it, Gaz, and I'm like, whoa, GDPR, stop, we need to do a data protection impact assessment, and they're like, Gaz, I want to build it. Yeah, nothing ever runs as quickly as founders want it to run, sadly. That's the way of the world.
Tanya and I have thought that actually dealing with some of the commercial sort of opportunities, and then having a really proactive attitude towards the commercials, towards the foundations that you need to have in place in order to get a healthy business, actually. So like dealing with GDPR upfront, honestly, openly, and, you know, with a recommended amount of caution, but also you've been brave in terms of how you've made it work for, you know, for the app and wanting to make it work. So I think you're a great example of how you can get the foundations of a startup in place early on, quickly, relatively sort of cost effectively, without storing up problems later on down the line. So the GDPR in particular has been a great example of that.
I think you'll probably agree, Gareth, that thinking about the data protection side before you dive into the development or in tandem with the ideas certainly makes for a smoother process than trying to undo it and sort of backtrack over it.
Yeah, I guess, as I said before, I've always been anxious my whole life, and I realised that that's actually just because I'm a strategist. So my job is always thinking about what could go wrong and what all the connotations are, and that's helped me build products in the future. By just thinking about what are the things that are going to stop us, and then you use that as a creative trigger for how you're going to solve the problem. So the sooner you think about it, the sooner you can base your idea on it, and then the sooner it's not a problem. So that's always been my approach with all of this stuff, is it's not a barrier, it's just a trigger for creative thought that we then need to think about how we're going to include it. And the more inclusive those ideas are at the start, then the quicker everything else is later. So
I certainly appreciate the proactive approach.
Okay. I have a very cheesy phrase about it, but I talk about slowing down to speed up. Ultimately, it's like slow down the initial excitement, work it out properly, and then ultimately your trajectory will be about 10 times faster once you get through it.
That's a good clip right there, Gareth. for a growth or a startup generally, a growth company or a startup generally, I think that's brilliant. We've talked a lot about, like, from a macro level, what success will look like, and obviously a widespread understanding of emotional fitness and how it should run par with physical fitness. But for you, Nick, for the FICA community, on a more micro level, on a more personal level, what will success look like for you guys?
That's a good question. I mean, for me personally, I want to, you know, obviously, do we want to build a business that has the impact we want it to have? I think, you know, forgetting about myself personally in that situation, obviously we're in this to look after our families and, you know, to make sure that we're looking at doing our duty of care to the people we care about. But that aside, because I think that's a given in any business, I think for me it's the impact. You know, when we got our randomized control trial back and we see that we're making a significantly statistical impact on people's mental well-being, then that's what we want to see. So yeah, the bigger the impact, the bigger the scale. That's why I do this, because I think I know how much it's helped me, and I want that to be for everyone.
Great, Gareth, thank you. I think we're probably going to give you a rest and see you're drinking again. You've done a lot of talking, so we really appreciate you coming on our podcast today, Gareth. Thank you very much.
No problem. I literally talk about this company all day, every day, so it's not a problem. It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to our podcast. Thank you once again to Tanya Wilkie for contributing, and to Hamish Perry for doing likewise. But all of our thanks really goes to Gareth Fryer, one of the co-founders of the FICA community, for being so open and honest about his relationship with his mental health, with his business, and with the technology that supports that business. Thank you once again, Gareth.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.